This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 215. Can a comic collector of over 25 years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
Bruce finds himself on Earth 1 while Alan gets green on Earth 2. Meanwhile, Bruce is beaten up on the new DCU, King Arthur fights demons, and we learn more about the Sweet Tooth Plague. This is How I Got My Wife to Read Comics for Sunday, July 15, 2012. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just a reminder, you can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts, and blogs. But you should really subscribe via iTunes, where you should leave us a review.
And you can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter @sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP. Well, we've got 2 weeks to catch up on, so let's get started with Batman Earth 1 by Johns and Frank. So this is part of this separate Earth 1 continuity, a separate line that they're running, not to be confused with the new Earth 2 book or the new DCU continuity. Gee, this won't be confusing to new readers at all.
So this makes me think maybe the old DC universe is actually one of the 52 worlds or however many alternate Earths there are, and they could just eventually go back to it.
Well, and that's something that people have suggested, that that would be their escape clause if the new DCU didn't work out. And they may still take advantage of it.
Quite frankly, I think they should go to this story for the new Batman universe. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because Geoff Johns tells a hell of a reboot story. I don't want to ruin it for those who haven't read it yet, just saying go out and get it.
I want to ruin it. I want to spoil it.
Well, if you want to.
It was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say this, it's a much darker Gotham, which I didn't think was possible. We have a rookie Batman with untested gadgets, a Wayne family that's much more involved politically. The origin story is tied even more closely to the mob. There's a much more active version of Alfred, and there's other familiar characters, but now in slightly different roles.
Well, let's just say about Alfred that he actually knew Thomas Wayne back when they served together in the military.
Right.
Rather than being from a family of butlers.
Exactly, which is probably more realistic than having a family of butlers. I have to say, the Gary Frank artwork is superb. If you're listening to this right now and you haven't gotten it yet, stop the podcast and go get it. It is a hardcover. It's $22.99, but it's absolutely worth it.
It is absolutely worth it, but you can find it discounted in a number of places.
Sure.
You know, Amazon. Use the link on our website.
Or you can always go to your local comic book shop and see what kind of discounts you can get from them.
But it is very good.
Absolutely.
I absolutely love this book. If this was the Batman continuity that was going on now, I would be reading every Batman title. And as we talk about Batman later, you'll see what I think about that.
Earth 2, number 3 by Robinson and Scott. So this is the aftermath of the train explosion in issue 2. And of course, Sam, the boyfriend, didn't make it.
Well, but at least at this point, it doesn't look like he was singled out and killed because he was the boyfriend.
Right.
So unlike the girlfriends of Green Lanterns in the past who have been murdered because they were Green Lantern girlfriends, he was not.
No refrigerator for Sam.
Exactly.
So we get the Alan Scott GL origin story. And like other things on Earth 2, the green is a supernatural force more than a scientific force. And we're wondering if this is tied to the green from Swamp Thing. It almost seems like it is.
Maybe the same kind of green.
Right.
Certainly not making him a Swamp Thing kind of character.
Right.
But the same kind of living force.
Mm-hmm. it warns him about an upcoming evil, and here comes the next DC event coming out of that. The uniform isn't bad. I can live with it. It seems decent. It doesn't seem ridiculous. I like how the engagement ring becomes the Green Lantern ring.
I really liked how the Force told him he needed something to focus. So it wasn't like they said it had to be a ring or anything. He just needed a focus, and that's what he picked.
Mm-hmm. I really like how the new heroes in Earth 2 generally are accepting the job quickly. I always thought there was too much whining in modern origin stories of, I don't want to do this.
I can't be a hero.
With great power comes great responsibility. It's like, if you get this opportunity, why wouldn't you just take it? So meanwhile, the gray realizes that the green has found its champion now. So it starts sending its tendrils into Washington, D.C.
And we discussed this, and we weren't quite sure if that was an actual sequence or a projected kind of sequence.
Right, because it seems to do huge damage to Washington.
And you would have thought that there would have been some to do about it.
Right. And it seems very much like the rot effect in the Swamp Thing Animal Man stories. It goes out and kills everything. All plants wither and animals die. I'm also wondering if this gray is tied to, there was a character, a villain called the Gray Man in the early Bwahaha JLI period, very early in its run.
Right. He was related to the fate gods, wasn't he?
Right. To the
gods of chaos and order.
Right. We learn who the Gray's champion is. It's Solomon Grundy, which kind of makes sense because he's a classic Golden Age GL villain. That's really where he comes from. So it's good to see him kind of showing up almost immediately once Alan becomes Green Lantern.
But he seemed like a little bit more intelligent Grundy, didn't he?
Right. And Grundy's gone back and forth where he's a mindless brute in some versions. He's a little more coherent in others. So we've seen that kind of thing before.
Okay.
And the next issue says we're going to get into the Atom, the Al Pratt Atom.
Does he make himself smaller, or does he just make himself more dense?
His original power was he didn't actually have powers. He was just a short guy who had taught himself to
pack a big punch.
To pack a big punch very well.
Okay.
And then in the later stories, he got some sort of atomic power, and they added some sort of atomic punch. So I don't know if he's going to become an actual powered hero, or maybe just a guy with a costume and good training.
Well, either way, I will like it.
Yep.
I love this storyline.
Yep. Batman number 11 by Snyder and Capullo. So we're concluding the Court of Owls Bat crossover.
I don't know how much this concluded anything.
They left a lot of open threads, but Bruce fights Lincoln March / Thomas Wayne Jr. maybe. And Lincoln pretty much wipes the floor with Bruce while he's telling him his tale of woe, of how he was trapped in his original injuries. He couldn't talk and he couldn't move, but he could see things. And he saw this reflection of Gotham from this other building. And
I'm sorry, but if he was, as a baby, injured and in this vegetative state, he would have never learned what words meant, who
right.
was talking to him, or how to use his visual cortex.
Yeah.
I don't believe it.
So Lincoln tries to drag Bruce into a jet engine in flight, actually into the jet. And of course, Bruce survives, as he always does.
And he falls from the airplane that's flying over Gotham.
Yes.
And just happens to land in Gotham Tower.
Well, yeah, sure.
Without doing anything besides maybe breaking his leg.
Right. And then Lincoln blows up the new Wayne Tower with both of them in it. And Bruce survives again. And Lincoln is missing. They
yes.
never find the body.
Bruce says they went through the rubble of the entire site. Yeah.
So the second half of the story is Bruce recuperating from what is apparently a broken arm and a broken leg. And the Talons are frozen under Blackgate. And I'm sure that won't come back
yeah,
to haunt them at all.
That's going to work out really well.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Bruce and Dick have a heart-to-heart talk. questions of, was Lincoln actually Bruce's brother? Did Bruce actually save Dick from being a Talon, or would he have been able to save himself regardless? Bruce is going to find out the facts, but he says he knows the truth. Lincoln is not his brother, and that Dick would have been fine without him.
He wouldn't have become a Talon.
And then in the backup story, this fall of the House of Wayne concludes, really not more with a whimper than a bang. That kind of petered out after a very interesting first part.
The only thing in here that was really interesting was when Jarvis is being chased around prior to being murdered, and basically they're saying what was in the letter that he left for Alfred that Alfred would never get, right?
Right.
He mentioned that he came across the parents, mm-hmm. Bruce's parents, talking about Thomas as though he hadn't died. And so maybe he really didn't die.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been made very vague about that.
And Bruce says, oh, they would have told him.
Right.
But how old was Bruce when his parents died? Maybe they would have told him when he turned 18 or something.
And they never got the chance. So Alfred's father, Jarvis, warns him never to come to Gotham. And then Jarvis is either killed by the owls or maybe turned into a Talon. And then we cut to the present day where Bruce and Alfred are at Jarvis's grave. And just like in the main story, Alfred knows the truth, regardless of the facts. Jarvis didn't become a Talon, although he has no proof of that whatsoever.
Right.
This really petered out. This started very interestingly, and I thought it was going to be this huge ongoing saga, and then just kind of wrapped it up as much as they did. I mean, again, lots of open threads, and we know there's going to be a Talon ongoing series coming out in, I think, September. So we know there's more to this, but this particular storyline just kind of, I don't know if Snyder was told, okay, you got to wrap it up because something else is coming or what, because it just seemed to be like, oh, and then we put them under there and we froze them and that's it. Yeah.
Now, I don't know, but I think maybe these Bat books would benefit from being read as a collection rather mm-hmm. than as individual issues.
I would think you're right.
Just because it's, when you've got four or five different stories featuring the same characters, and you read one part of each story each month, and they don't really relate to each other at all.
Yeah.
It's hard to keep track of what's what.
That's true.
But I'm just not enjoying these Bat books at all. I don't think any of them.
I think we'll need to do another reduction in books. I'm wondering about Batman and Robin, for example. That may be another one we drop.
Well, you know, I've never liked Batman
yeah,
and Robin.
Right, right.
I dislike Damien. Not my great-nephew Damien.
Ah, that's
Damien
good.
Damien in the comic books.
That's good. Demon Knights number 11 by Cornell and Neves. First off, I'm really shocked this title hasn't been canceled yet. Not because of the quality. I think it's a great book. But the sales numbers are very low. So I have to assume this is going to tie into a future event, maybe into Trinity War somehow, and they have to continue the storyline because other books with far higher numbers are getting the axe.
Well, I know we'll probably talk about this in a later episode, but there's a lot of news coming out of Comic-Con this weekend about the Dark line of comics.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they're just going to try to do a little bit more push with the Dark line and they want to keep this around.
Could be. We learned that the knights have been converted into demons when they arrive at Camelot, and they like being demons. So a demonic version of King Arthur douses them all with spring water from Camelot, which converts them back. And there's this new tower there that creates this, quote, sickening light that changes them, that turned them into demons, and will do so again. So the group learns that Xanadu is related to Arthur and is in fact a fae, which we knew, but they didn't. And they all go to attack the tower, leaving Merlin's body in this cave, which was Morgan Le Fay's plan all along.
And she, of course, is in the tower.
Right. We're seeing to start to move forward on this. It's just, I thought it was really interesting to bring in King Arthur as an actual character. What I wouldn't mind seeing is them tying this concept into the events in the Camelot 3000 series they did in the 80s. I think that would be cool. I don't know if they ever will, but because you're bringing King Arthur himself into the continuity.
Right.
Sweet Tooth number 35 from Vertigo by Jeff Lemire. We're coming to the end of this title soon because Lemire is getting very busy elsewhere. Lots of other books he's doing.
And he's doing a very good job on them.
We learn what Sing learned. So he learned that Fox worked as a janitor at the lab where the plague began in the first place. And his wife died at the lab, so she was never at the cabin. And so Sweet Tooth, who thought that his mom was there, wasn't. And so this is all being told, at least the original story, from this Bible that Fox had. And so now he's wondering what else in the Bible is a lie. So Sing makes it to the lab in Alaska, and he finds Thacker's journal, which is the whole storyline we saw from 1911. And he also finds this nursery and a ladder down to the original cave from the 1911 story with its own lab in it. And finds more hybrid skeletons in the lab and more live hybrids. And those don't look like kids. I thought maybe they were actually adult hybrids, which we've not seen before. Supposedly, the idea is that the adults get this plague and die, and the offspring become these hybrids.
Well, and Sweet Tooth was supposed to be the oldest.
Right.
Of them.
So maybe there are even older ones that are now adults.
Well, whatever, but it's very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So we learned a little more of how some of those stuff all tied together, which makes sense because, as I said, Lemire is running out this series. I think there's only a few issues left.
But he's also not, I think, rushing the ending.
Right.
And some of these Vertigo titles, I've felt that they've rushed the ending on.
Yeah, you certainly feel like, so for example, iZombie is rushing the ending. And that's mostly because, you know, it's clear they, that case, they weren't given a chance to tell the whole story they wanted to tell. So they just had to jam all the major concepts into
it.
Well,
when the writer offends DC Comics.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So you mentioned Comic-Con earlier, and so are we going to talk about Comic-Con? Well, not this week, because we're going to do a special episode all about Comic-Con next week, and because we're taping this episode before Comic-Con is over, and I thought, well, there's no use trying to get into that until all the dust has settled.
Let's hear all the news before we comment on it.
Right. Okay, so before we get out of here, it's time to play our America's fastest growing new game show.
Guess who's on the cover of Entertainment Weekly? Are you ready, Mark?
I'm ready.
I said that without taking a breath. Okay, go.
TV related?
No.
Movie related?
Yes.
One movie?
Yes.
Is it a movie that hasn't come out yet?
Yes.
Is it superhero related?
Yes.
Is it Batman?
Yes.
So it's Dark Knight Rises and it's Christian Bale?
Yes.
Is it just Christian Bale?
No.
It's Christian Bale and Anne Hathaway?
No.
Oh, wow. It's Christian Bale and Tom Hardy?
Yes.
Ah, as Bane.
Yeah, I made you keep guessing because you only used 30 seconds.
Yeah,
because
it was so friggin' obvious. It's like, okay, well, it's a movie coming out and it's superhero related and it's Comic-Con week, so.
Yes, and in case anybody is interested in where we'll be next week, it's at the Batman movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably on the biggest screen
we can find. Yes. Oh, but if you hadn't heard, there's a Batman movie coming out.
Oh, really? I wondered what that little ad was at the top of every DC comic for the past month.
All right. I want to remind you to go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, including my blog about Hogan's Heroes and Star Trek The Next Generation. You can subscribe via iTunes, and please leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter at sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9 SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.